This is Morning Meeting on Boston Herald Radio, and we are thrilled to be joined by Rich Allen. He wrote this book along with Edwin Guthman, and it is called RFK, His Words for Our Times, and it is coinciding with the 50th anniversary of his death and his assassination, and it has a lot of his best words, and then followed by, you know, some context that sort of places it in a different view as of today. Rick Allen, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure. And you want to jump right to page 323, huh?
Sure.
No, go ahead.
Christian gave you a heads up, I guess.
Exactly.
So talk to us about why you felt this was an important time. Obviously, you've unfortunately got this coinciding with the assassination, but I mean, what else makes this appropriate for our times?
Yeah, absolutely. The 50th anniversary is just that. It's an anniversary. It's a good historical kind of news peg, but that wouldn't have been enough for us to want to write the book or for folks to want to read it. I think that the two principal reasons that we did so was first that in rereading Kennedy's words, we were really struck by how relevant and beautiful they are today. And second is more of a matter of impact and direction. Robert Kennedy's always been my political hero. And when he was alive, I think most of us, most Americans, believed that they were going to lead a better life than their parents and leave to their children and grandchildren a better opportunity. And I'm not so sure that that feeling is widely shared now. And I feel that Robert Kennedy's language, his vision for America, even the policies that he championed, really help us find our way forward in the future. So we consider this to be not a adventure and nostalgia, but really a catalyst to action.
That's an interesting point. And so in the news this week, we've been talking a lot about foreign policy. There's some big things that Trump is moving. So I sort of gravitated towards, as I was looking over this book this week, getting ready for the interview, RFK's comments on foreign policy. I think we think of him a lot in a time, especially in sort of 1968 when he was at the pinnacle running for president. There was a lot of domestic turmoil going on in the United States. But one of the themes in RFK's thinking about international diplomacy is that the United States should be more open about talking about our own domestic problems and what we're doing to try to solve them. I think, you know, in the era, maybe he was talking more about kind of civil rights questions that were going on and the other issues we were talking about in the time. But do you think that is a view that has informed our approach to international diplomacy since then? Or are we, and you know, what was behind RFK's call for us to sort of be more frank about the problems going on in our own backyard as we were trying to make progress abroad?
It really was principal to his definition of what leadership meant in an international, in a global context. And he was trying to knit together two ideas that we may regard as disparate. The first was that America was an acknowledged global leader. But what that meant for Kennedy was a commitment to a set of moral principles which he believed were commonly desired by people around the world. And so America asserted the primacy not of its own power, but of the power of those ideas. And the second part of it, of his approach to foreign policy, was a recognition that the United States wasn't going to be able to dictate progress in other countries. It lacked the power to do so, and attempts to impose it militarily or otherwise were going to end up failing in the long run. And so what he was trying to do by acknowledging American shortcomings is to show that our idea of what led to greatness as a nation wasn't that you had achieved perfection, but that you were consistently and relentlessly working towards improvement. That was his concept of American exceptionalism, not that you're trying to get back to some imagined past state when everything was wonderful, but that you were clear-headed about your past, about the shortcomings you were experiencing in the present, and committed to trying to make a better future. I think that is the essence of American foreign policy at its best. And we hit that on occasion, but not consistently.
I think he sort of showed this in one of the episodes of RFK's life that I think some of his best writing came from, or some of the writing that we can take the most lessons from now, was his trip to South Africa to ostensibly speak out against apartheid in 1966. If you go back and read those speeches, and again, I think, you know, along with the Indianapolis speech, which I want to talk about in a second, are some of his most poignant work. But in a trip to South Africa to speak about the evils of apartheid, RFK really spends a lot of time talking about the struggles that are going on in this country with civil rights as a way of sort of saying that, you know, the questions you guys are asking, that this debate is not abnormal. Here's how we're handling it, instead of sort of just going right at apartheid and saying, you know, this is an evil structure that's treating people badly. How in the time, how was that approach to apartheid received? Sort of, was there criticism that he was going over and airing our own dirty laundry in other countries, or that he wasn't being aggressive enough against apartheid? Because he really used it as a chance to focus his thinking, it seems like, on the contemporary state of the civil rights struggle in the late 60s in this country.
I'm so delighted that you've pointed to the section of the book and part of his life, Kevin. It was the most fun for me to write. I have friends in South Africa who pulled out of the newspaper morgues the original stories from that trip, when a number of the English language papers were putting 6 to 8 reporters on Kennedy coverage a day, because he was so active and his meetings and speeches had such a great impact. Remember, in 66, Mandela was a recent resident of Robben Island. Apartheid was perhaps at its height. The U.S. was not widely engaged in efforts to try to change that system. Kennedy was criticized frequently, particularly by conservatives, for seeming to, as you said, air America's dirty laundry. But he did so first because he believed those shortcomings were reality, and second because, again, the process was one of improvement, not, you know, kind of being whisked off to heaven in one step. And so it also, I think, and he felt, led his audience, young people in particular in South Africa, to believe that there was a better future available for them. He gave them the sense that he, is probably the most famous American of the time, was focused on their issues, their problems, their history, and the common aspirations that Americans held with South Africans. And so that message of hope and a common sense that we're working all to improve our lives and the lives of our community were essential parts of his communication strategy and his notion of what leadership meant.
We're talking to Rick Allen, co-author of RFK, His Words for Our Times, a new book that's just come out in the last few weeks. We're heading up to the anniversary of the assassination of RFK on June 5th, 6th, coming up. So it's clear when you read a lot of these works that RFK, as the rest of his family was very educated. In a lot of classical themes come out. The writing is beautiful. One of my favorite, I think this might be my favorite RFK speech from his lifetime, was not one that was prepared. The speech that he gave in Indianapolis just after learning that Dr. Martin Luther King had been assassinated, to a group of people who had come to the airport not knowing that news either, to greet him on a campaign stop. And he spoke so, you know, it was off the cuff, but he spoke very personally about his feelings about having his own brother murdered. And you can see in his speech that sort of personal side coming through I feel like it's a more raw way than it does in his other prepared remarks, but it really connected with this crowd. And you could see that his aim was to get this crowd not to react terribly to this news that he was really breaking to them that Dr. King had been assassinated. Is there more context to that speech that you can add? It really is my favorite.
It's a tremendous, tremendous speech. Part of it is reproduced at his gravesite in Arlington. And I think many people single that out as well. But there is a lot more context in this sense. Remember, in 68, you didn't have 24-hour news coverage, cable channels, didn't even have cell phones. So he was coming to Indianapolis with the knowledge that Dr. King had been shot, and then when he landed in Indianapolis, Robert Kennedy learned that King had died. But the folks at the rally waiting for him in the ghetto in Indianapolis did not yet know. And when you look at the video from that evening, and we actually have it up on our website, rfkspeeches.com, when you look at it, the beginning of the speech, when he delivers that news, there's just a wailing from the crowd of shock and dismay. But you put your fingers on the elements which are so important now, half a century later. The first was the eloquence that Kennedy had extemporaneously. Again, as you said, he really had no notes. He had a single sheet of paper in his hands. He never looked down at it. Nothing had been prepared because this was all in the moment. But he's quoting Aeschylus, the Greek tragedian, from more than 2,000 years before, and putting out concepts that would be amazing to hear in a contemporary leader. He didn't believe in talking down to his audience. He believed in elevating himself and them by talking about central concepts with the most compelling language he could find. The second part, which you also mentioned, is the personal credibility he had gained as a spokesperson for nonviolence because of the violence suffered by his family, that in particular the death of his brother, President John Kennedy. And because he spoke of the ordinary human reaction in the face of violence perpetrated against someone you love and care about, as that crowd did with Dr. King, Kennedy spoke from a perspective of personal credibility, saying this will not lead us out of our problems. And the final thing I'd say about that speech is its impact. He had been warned against going to the rally by the mayor of Indianapolis and the police chief, and they told him they would not provide police protection, and that if he went against their wishes, he was there on his own. And at the suggestion of his advance man, John Lewis, the civil rights icon and current congressman, who urged Kennedy to go down into that part of town because that moment was of critical importance. Kennedy spoke that night very briefly, but it had huge impact on an evening where over 100 American cities experienced severe rioting, 30 plus people were killed, many more injured, tens of millions of dollars of property damage. Indianapolis stood out as a city that did not suffer riots. And a lot of it had to do with the connection that Robert Kennedy made personally in the most difficult of times.
All right, the book is RFK, His Words for Our Times. We are speaking with Rick Allen. He is the co-author of the book, and I'm assuming, folks can get this. I see it on Amazon pretty much. Where else can they get it?
Everywhere. It is
right.
in booksellers around the country and online through Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and others.
Awesome. Well, Rick, thanks so much for calling us and chatting with us about the book.
Thank you, Hillary. Thank you.